Hideki knelt by the body and went through the man's pack. There was food. And a photograph. A pretty woman wearing a dress and sitting on a beach. The smeared imprint of her red lips decorated the bottom corner of the photo. There were more American bodies nearby, and Hideki hurriedly stuffed his own pack with as much food as he could find from theirs. He kept all the pictures he found, too, adding them to Ray's collection. Their collection now. A single shot rang out. Pakow! And a bullet flipped into the mud near Hideki. A sniper. Hideki dove behind one of the bodies. The sniper didn't shoot again, but he knew where Hideki was. Hideki cursed himself for his stupidity. There was a reason this ravine was still full of American corpses. It was too dangerous to come and get them. He must have wandered right into the no man's land between the Americans on one side and the Japanese on the other. That meant that the slope behind him was occupied by the Imperial Japanese Army. If he could get to one of the caves inside it, he'd be safe. But if he stood, the American sniper would have a clear shot again. Hideki watched the star shell overhead growing dimmer and dimmer. He waited, his throat dry with anticipation, until the shell suddenly winked out and everything was pitch black again. Hideki leaped to his feet and ran up the hill, his bare feet slipping in the mud beneath him. For every meter he gained, he felt like he lost a half meter sliding back down. Pakow! 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 Bullets whipped into the hillside around him. The American sniper couldn't see him, but he knew Hideki would be running in the darkness. Hideki climbed faster, his arms and legs scrambling to push him higher. Higher! Pakow! 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 More rifles joined to the first. The American sentries were taking pot shots at him, hoping to hit him in the dark. Boom! A battleship offshore fired another star shell. It whistled high into the air, leaving a glowing green-white trail. Any second now, it would explode, the burning phosphorus lighting up the whole hillside. The American snipers would see him plain as day. Hideki's hand hit something wooden. A man-made ledge. Whoosh! The star shell burst overhead, and Hideki saw a small open window cut into the hillside, just big enough for him to crawl through. And the Americans saw him. Hideki tossed his backpack into the hole as bullets shredded the wooden frame, then pulled himself through the window head first. He hit the rock floor inside with a thump and scrambled back against the wall as bullets pinged through the opening. He licked his dry lips and panted hard, but at least he was still breathing. He'd made it. But where were the Japanese? The bunker was empty. If the Americans had been charging this hill for days and couldn't even come close enough to collect their dead, where were the Japanese soldiers with their rifles and machine guns and mortars? The American snipers stopped shooting. Hideki slid away from the hole in the wall, staying out of their line of sight. He crawled through a narrow tunnel to a larger cavern beyond, where multiple levels had been cut out of the rock. But the whole place was completely empty. Where was everybody? Hideki got goosebumps walking through the empty bunker. This place should have been teeming with Japanese soldiers. And it looked like it had been until very recently. The floors were littered with abandoned ammunition boxes, scraps of bloody bandages, and empty ration cans. But there were no people. Hideki wound his way through the tunnels to the opposite side of the hill, facing away from the American lines. There, another hole cut in the mountain, framed the scene on the other side, showing him where everyone had gone. The Imperial Japanese Army was in full retreat. The roads south beyond the front lines were clogged with Japanese soldiers, all hurrying toward their next line of defense under the cover of dark and rain. When the Americans attacked the hill again tomorrow, they would meet no resistance. They would storm the bunker and find no one left inside. Except for Hideki. Unless he left right now. Hideki hiked Ray's backpack up on his shoulders, climbed through the hole, and ran. Typhoon of Steel. Hideki made a rectangle with his fingers and squinted, framing an imaginary photograph. All around him, thousands of Okinawan refugees and Japanese soldiers trudged south in the pouring rain. The Japanese soldiers didn't even stop to go to the bathroom. They urinated as they jogged along the muddy highway, none of them willing to pause for even 30 seconds. They had to get to the next line of defensive caves before the Americans caught up. Hidden among them, Hideki was just one of tens of thousands of people clogging the roads. The highway would take them through Shikina to Ichinichibashi, and that's as far as Hideki needed to go. Ichinichibashi was where his sister would be. Hideki had never been this far south before, but wherever he was, it didn't look like Okinawa anymore. American bombs had knocked down trees and taken the tops off hills, stomping the landscape flat like an angry god. Entire villages were shattered, the wooden houses and barns reduced to toothpicks. There was no color to anything anymore. The people, the ground, the sky, they were all a dull, filthy gray-brown, like all the paints on an artist's palette had been swirled together in a muddy mess. This wasn't Okinawa. Not the Okinawa that Hideki knew and loved. Hideki had always used his fingers to frame what he was seeing in front of him, the way the photographer had taught him. But now he did something different. Now he used the frame to imagine the way Okinawa had been, before the Americans had invaded, before the Japanese army had brought in cannons and built bunkers. He saw brilliant white coral sand roads lined with waving green palm trees, thatched wooden barns, square houses with red terracotta roofs, women in blue bashofu kimonos with babies strapped to their backs going to the market, old men in brown bashofu and round straw hats, leading water buffalo to the sugarcane fields. Everywhere he looked, the bright memory of before overlaid the gray, miserable after, like his fingers were making a window into the past, a past that was so recent, so real to him, that he could almost reach out and touch it. Something moved in the corner of Hideki's eye, and he glanced sideways, but nothing was there.
I know, he told the ghost of Ray. I'm sorry, I'm trying. Kimiko will be able to help us. We just have to find her first.
But how will I ever find her in all this? Hideki wondered. An American fighter plane came roaring right up behind the long line of people, like it was following the highway. It flew so low that Hideki could make out the face of the pilot. Everyone ducked and screamed, but the plane didn't shoot at them. It roared up into the sky and circled high above them for a few seconds before disappearing into the clouds. The Japanese soldiers among them shoved Hideki and the other Okinawans out of the way as they ran off in all directions, and Hideki suddenly understood. The plane was a spotter for the battleships offshore. It had probably already radioed in where the crowds were.
"Incoming! Get down!"
Hideki yelled. He dove off the road into a water-filled ditch as the first shell exploded right in the middle of the highway. The blast was deafening. Hideki held his breath and put his head under the water. The muffled booms shook him and rocked the ground, and he squeezed his eyes shut and drew his arms and legs in tight. Mud and rock and shrapnel pelted him. His world was hellfire and destruction for longer minutes than he could count, punctuated only by quick gasps of air. At last, the bombing stopped. Hideki waited under the water until his lungs burned so much he had to breathe, and he lifted himself up on his hands and knees. The road was gone, and so was everyone who had been on it. Those who had been outside the target area, those who had been spared, got to their feet and hurried on through the carnage, leaving the wounded behind. And Hideki, his eyes dry and his heart hard, did the same. Family. It was safer to travel by night, when the American planes weren't flying and the battleships weren't shooting, but Hideki was exhausted. He had to find some place to sleep. He broke away from the refugees and soldiers plodding south and soon came to a family tomb. Hideki almost cried with relief. He staggered inside, hoping the ancestors resting there would forgive him for invading their home for one night. But the ancestors weren't the ones he needed to worry about. The family who owned the tomb were already hiding there. There were 8 of them, a mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, and 4 small children, all huddled in the back.
I'm sorry, Hideki told them. I just need to get in out of the rain. I need to sit down.
He didn't wait for them to say yes. Hideki's weary legs gave out, and he flopped to the floor of the tomb. It was all he could do to keep his eyes open. He let his pack slip off his back for the first time that day, and he slumped over, absolutely exhausted. The family crept over to meet him and introduced themselves. Their last name was Miyagi. They each told him their first names, too, but Hideki was too tired to remember any of them. They had been living in this tomb since the battle began, they told him. Not one of them had been outside in 2 months. They still had water, but their food had run out 5 days ago. The littlest of the children looked shrunken, like his body was eating itself from the inside out, and they all had hollow eyes and sunken cheeks. They look like ghosts, Hideki thought to himself, like their long-dead ancestors resurrected. Hideki thought of his father, perhaps never to be buried in the Kaneshiro family tomb, and he sagged.
Why didn't you evacuate? Hideki finally asked them. Why did you stay?
We thought the Imperial Japanese Army would protect us, Father Miyagi said. This is our home, Grandfather Miyagi added. This is where our ancestors live.
Hideki closed his eyes and nodded. It was the same answer he would have gotten from any of the refugees streaming south. This is our home. The Japanese will protect us. One of those things was true. The other was far from it.
Are the Americans really coming this way? Mother Miyagi asked Hideki.
Hideki was too tired to lie to them.
Yes, he said.
The children gasped and clutched at each other.
Is it true what they say? That the Americans are monsters?
Father Miyagi asked. Again, Hideki wanted to tell them the truth. But what was the truth?
Yes, he told them. And no. When they're fighting, the Americans are killing machines. When they're not, they're like us.
Hideki pulled the wet tangle of bandages from his head.
One of their doctors fixed me when I was hurt, he told the Miyagis, and they'll give you food if you ask for it.
Hideki pulled his pack around and fished out what was left of the ration boxes. They were coated with a waxy substance that helped keep them dry from the rain. The crackers were fairly disintegrated, but there was some chewy gray stuff, a few practically indestructible candy bars, and the meals in the tins. Hideki cracked one of the cans open, and Grandfather Miyagi cried out longingly at the delicious smell. Hideki took a bite to show them it was all right, and offered it to the family.
It's not poisoned, Hideki promised them. I've already eaten one, and I didn't get sick.
The Miyagis were too hungry to refuse. They fed the children first, and Hideki gave a second can to the adults. They all ate with relief, moaning gratefully.
I don't understand,
Grandmother Miyagi said when she'd finished eating. She had black squares and circles and arrows tattooed on the back of her hands, just like the kind old woman who had tried to help Hideki get rid of Rei's Mabui in the cave.
You say the American devils were nice to you, but we were told they would kill our babies. No, Hideki said, they're only monsters when they're afraid, just like the Japanese. All the Japanese and Americans care about is killing each other. You should surrender to the Americans.
Surrender, Father Miyagi said. But they'll kill us.
Not if you go to them now, Hideki replied. If you wait until they're fighting, until they've all become monsters, they'll eat you up. Do you understand? If you surrender to them without threatening them, they'll help you.
Hideki's suggestion caused a great deal of discussion, but he was too tired to be a part of it. After eating a bit of a candy bar, he laid his head on the American backpack and went to sleep. When Hideki woke, the Miyagi family had made a decision.
We're going to surrender,
Mother Miyagi said. Father Miyagi didn't look too happy about it, but there wasn't much to argue about at this point. They had run out of food. They wouldn't have lasted a day or two more if Hideki hadn't come along, and he was out of tin cans.
Will you take us to the Americans?
Grandfather Miyagi asked Hideki. It would be going backward a little way for Hideki, but he agreed. He walked with the Miyagis out of the tomb, back out into that awful, rainy darkness, and led them the way he had come. He wasn't moving forward anymore. He had been going back for days now, and now he was going back again. But this time, it felt right, like he was working towards something at last. The American soldiers had made camp for the night. They weren't fighting, but they were wary. Hideki made sure the soldiers could see and hear them coming in the darkness, and soon flashlights were shining in their faces, blinding the poor Miyagis who hadn't seen daylight in more than 2 months. The Miyagis had tied a white piece of cloth to a pole, and Father Miyagi waved it frantically. An American who spoke bad Japanese demanded to know who they were, and Hideki answered back in slow Japanese that they were Okinawan refugees. The grenade in Hideki's pocket had never felt heavier, more conspicuous. He was sure the Americans would see the bulge and shoot him. But after a tense few minutes of interrogation, the Americans finally lowered their lights and their weapons, and someone came to meet the Miyagis. Hideki tried to slip away into the darkness, but Mother Miyagi saw him.
"Aren't you coming with us?" she asked.
Hideki was tempted. He knew the Americans would give him food, shoes, a dry place to sleep. They would take him away from the fighting, the death. All this misery, all this suffering would be over for him. But not for Kimiko.
"No," Hideki told her. "I have to keep going south to find my sister. I have to make sure she's safe. She's the only family I have left."
Mother Miyagi suddenly pulled Hideki into a hug. He was old enough these days to grumble through a hug from his own mother, but she was gone now, and it had been so long since he'd felt a warm embrace. Hideki let Mother Miyagi hug him, and he hugged her back.
"Ichari bachudi," she said in Okinawan.
It meant, "Now that we've met, we're family." Hideki nodded.
"Thank you, Hideki," she added, releasing him. "I hope you find your sister."
The American soldiers took the Miyagi family away to safety, and Hideki slipped away, headed south once more in search of Kimiko. The Toilet Sauna. Hideki slogged along the highway with thousands more Okinawans and Japanese. When the crowd reached Shikina, a village just outside Naha, some of the IJA soldiers detoured to a command post cave. Hideki decided to go with them. He was leery of setting foot inside another cave with Japanese soldiers, but he needed something more to eat if he was going to have the energy to find his sister. And the command post would have food. Just the thought of eating made Hideki's head swim and his knees weaken. Almost all his best memories of food were wrapped up with memories of his family. His little brother, Isamu, slurping long Okinawa soba noodles with him at the lantern festival. His mother dishing out a big bowl of Goya champuru, a sloppy, delicious mix of bitter Goya melon and whatever else was in season, whenever their cousins visited. He and his father eating rafute, the brown sugar-glazed pork belly so delicate it fell apart in their fingers. Burning his mouth on deep-fried sata andagi, a kind of round donut ball, at a food stall with Kimiko on their way home from one of her Yuta house calls. Hideki began to miss his family more than he did a warm meal. And then his appetite for food was erased completely by the sights and smells that greeted him at the command post. The post was hot, humid, and stinky. Buckets of human waste festered in the corridors. Bags of fermenting, ruined rice sat in puddles of water on the floor. Soldiers walked around in nothing but their loincloths to battle the heat, and no one here had bathed in months. The command officers took turns sticking their heads up the ventilation shafts, desperate for a breath of fresh air. It was like a toilet mixed with a sauna, and Hideki gagged. One of the half-naked soldiers spied Hideki and grinned.
"Hey, girls," he called. "One of your boyfriends has arrived."
Boyfriend? Girls? What was he talking about? And then Hideki saw them. Nurses. Student nurses, like his sister. They were tending to dozens of injured Japanese soldiers, all laid out on boards. The Shikina command post was also a field hospital. Hideki rushed over to the nearest nurse, a girl just a year or two older than he was. She was wrapping a dirty brown bandage around a soldier's wounded arm.
"Do you have a nurse here named Kimiko?"
Hideki asked her.
"She's my sister."
The girl shook her head. She hadn't heard of a nurse named Kimiko, and neither had any of the other people Hideki asked. The excitement Hideki had felt on seeing nurses ebbed away like the tide, and the oppressive heat and stink returned. It was too much to hope that he'd find his sister in the first place he looked.
"Come out!" someone yelled in broken Japanese through the cave entrance. "Come out with hands up!"
Hideki froze. The Americans were here, right outside the cave. They were calling for everyone to come out and surrender.
"We should do it," Hideki said to a Japanese corporal. "We should all surrender."
The soldier stepped away from Hideki in disgust.
"Surrender," he said. "Never."
Hideki grimaced. The IJA would never give up a command post without a fight, which meant they were all going to die. Hideki grabbed the arm of the first nurse he had talked to.
"Quick, is there another way out of this cave?"
he asked.
"Yes," she told him, "at the back." "Go, go,"
Hideki told her.
"But the patients,"
the girl said. At the cave entrance, an American soldier peeked inside, his rifle raised. One of the guards at the door slipped out of the shadows and bayoneted him in the gut, and the American screamed.
"Everybody get out, now!"
Hideki yelled, and suddenly the air itself exploded. Liquid, dripping flames came shooting through the entrance of the cave, torching the guards and anyone else within 20 feet. The sauna of the command post became an oven. A handful of grenades came clattering in with the flames, and boom! The cave entrance collapsed in an explosion of rock and dirt. Hideki cried out again for everyone to run, but no one was listening anymore. Everyone was screaming and yelling and stampeding for the back of the cave. Soldiers pushed civilians out of the way, and wounded men on the floor cried out for help as they were trampled. Hideki pushed the nurses ahead of him toward the back of the cave. Something came pouring down the ventilation shafts above, splashing everyone ahead of him. Hideki recognized the smell from the car that had brought the Japanese photographer to his school. Gasoline. The American monsters were pouring gasoline down the ventilation shafts. A box full of grenades clattered down through the holes, and Hideki knew what came next. He grabbed an empty metal cabinet that stood against the wall and pulled it down on top of himself and the nearest nurse. The cabinet had just banged down on top of them when, kathoom! The command post became an inferno. The explosion of the grenades touched off the ammunition the Japanese army had stored in the cave. The ground beneath Hideki and the nurse rocked like an earthquake. But the metal cabinet stayed on top of them, protecting them from the worst of it.
Whoosh!
The nurse next to Hideki screamed, and it was only minutes later that Hideki realized he was screaming too. Through their shrieking, they could hear the metal of the cabinet popping as it twisted and warped in the heat. Hideki and the nurse huddled closer as the heat bore down on them. Hideki's bare foot touched the metal cabinet, and it burned against his skin like a wood stove. With a start, Hideki remembered the grenade in his pocket. How insulated was a ceramic grenade? Would the intense heat set it off? What if he and the nurse had found a safe place in the fiery cave, only for his grenade to blow them both to pieces? But there was no place he could throw the grenade now without lifting the cabinet and exposing them to the flames. Hideki curled himself tight around the grenade instead, hoping to shield the nurse from the blast if it went off. After what seemed like years, the roar of the fire outside died away, and Hideki and the nurse stopped screaming. Hideki's throat was ragged and tight, and his whole body still shook with fear, but he was alive. He put a hand to the cabinet wall. It was hot to the touch. He lifted the cabinet with his back instead, putting Ray's backpack between him and the hot metal. No one had survived, except Hideki and the girl. The bodies of nurses and soldiers lay all around them. The girl retched at the sight. Hideki didn't.
"Heaven help me," Hideki thought. "I've gotten used to it."
Hideki took the girl by the hand and ran as quick as he could for the exit at the back of the cave. Fire. The girl's name was Masako. She had been a student at a girls' high school in Naha, before she and her classmates were conscripted as nurses for the Shikina Field Hospital.
It was terrible, she told Hideki,
as they picked their way slowly up a muddy slope in the darkness. They were only going a few hundred yards to another command post nearby that Masako knew had nurses, but they had waited until night when it was safer. Masako had decided to come along with Hideki because she had nowhere else to go.
At first, it was just scrapes and bruises, Masako said, but as the Americans pushed south, we received more and more wounded. We ran out of medicine within the first few weeks, bandages too. We reused those when we could. It was the nurse's job to wash the bandages out in the river while American bombs fell all around us. The only other thing we could do was hold the wounded soldiers' hands and talk to them while they died.
So that was what his sister had been doing the whole time, too, Hideki thought, if she was still alive. Any hope he had to find Kimiko at the next command post was dashed when he and Masako crept through the entrance. It had already been abandoned by the IJA. Hideki and Masako split up to search the cave for anything to eat or drink. Hideki took a narrow tunnel away from the main passage and came to a small observation room cut into the side of the hill. He stopped to look through the opening and gasped at what he could see in the distance. Shuri Castle was on fire. The whole hill was a bright red bonfire in the darkness. The castle's pillars toppled as its ancient walls collapsed in flame. Hideki was numb as he watched Shuri Castle burn. Of course it was on fire. Of course it was destroyed. He'd been a fool to think the Japanese army could defend Okinawa, and a fool to think that Shuri Castle would survive. Everything on Okinawa would burn. A divine wind might still come to save Japan, but no kamikaze was coming to save this island. Shuri Castle was gone, and Okinawa was gone with it.
Hideki, look, food!
Masako cried. Hideki's growling stomach won out over his heartache, and he rushed back to the main cavern. Masako had found a half-empty crate of IJA rations, food in tin cans. Hideki and Masako had to use bayonets that had been left behind to punch holes in the cans, but it was worth the effort. The tins were filled with delicious pineapple slices. Hideki gulped down two whole cans, making sure to drink every last drop of the sweet pineapple juice. He was just getting to work on his third can of pineapples when a squad of Japanese soldiers from another command post came into the cave searching for leftover supplies. They immediately confiscated all the tin cans Hideki and Masako hadn't opened.
"Why are you here?" a lieutenant demanded.
"We came here from the field hospital," Hideki said. "The Americans attacked and drove us out."
The lieutenant nodded.
"Well, it's time for you to both rejoin the army. Come with us."
"No, not again. Hideki just wanted to find his sister, not get pulled back into the war." He looked around for some place to run, to hide, but one of the soldiers was already grabbing him and Masako by the arms and dragging them to their feet.
"This is your island, after all, not ours," the lieutenant said. "You should be the ones fighting for it."
What island? Hideki thought. What was there left to fight for? And who should he be fighting? Hideki hated the Americans for attacking it, and the Japanese for giving them a reason to attack. The Japanese soldiers dragged Hideki and Masako to another cave. It wasn't far away, but it hadn't yet been discovered by the Americans. This bunker was crammed full of Japanese soldiers, both healthy and wounded, and 8 Okinawan children who had taken refuge with them. Hideki and Masako were quickly forgotten, and the food they had found was taken away and given to the soldiers. Hideki fumed, but didn't say anything. He knew better than to argue.
"We've got to find a way out of here," Hideki told Masako.
"Why?"
Masako asked.
"Isn't it safer with the soldiers?"
"It wasn't very safe in the field hospital, was it?" Hideki pointed out.
"No, you idiot."
It wasn't Masako who had spoken. It was another girl nearby, a nurse, scolding one of the children. Hideki couldn't see who the girl was, but there was something about the way she said the word idiot. Something in the scolding yet compassionate tone that made his heart skip a beat. His eyes went wide. Could it be? Hideki broke away from Masako and flew across the room. Two Japanese soldiers barked at him for squeezing between them, and he almost fell, pushing his way through a knot of arguing children. But at last he found her. The nurse had her back to him, tending to a young boy's scraped knee, and Hideki grabbed her by the shoulder and spun her around. It was Kimiko. The girl who died.
Hideki?
Kimiko gasped, her eyes growing huge.
Kimiko!
Hideki cried. Hideki couldn't believe his good fortune. His sister was alive, and he'd found her. After all he'd been through, after all he'd done and all he'd lost, finding Kimiko felt like the sun emerging after weeks of rain, and he basked in its warmth. Hideki hugged his sister tight. After a long minute, Kimiko held Hideki at arm's length and gazed at him like they hadn't seen each other in years. Hideki wondered what he must look like, stick-thin, barefoot, hair a wet, tangled mess, wearing an oversized Japanese uniform. Did he look years older, the way Yoshio had? Kimiko definitely looked older, more adult. Her round face had lengthened, and her full cheeks had flattened. She looked weary and wary, like she had seen too much to be shocked by anything anymore. Wiser, too. Kimiko wore her nurse's uniform, a gray western-style pleated dress with short sleeves and a wide white sailor collar. Pouches for bandages and medicine hung from a wide black fabric belt worn high above her waist, and a white nurse's hat covered most of her black hair. Just a hint of the white streak still showed. Kimiko looked as happy to see Hideki as he felt, but then her face fell, and she smacked him hard on the head.
You idiot!
Kimiko told him.
You got here just in time to die with the rest of us. Ow! Don't! I hurt my head!
Hideki cried. Kimiko felt gently in his hair for the wound and found his stitches.
What did you do?
She asked.
What do you mean, die with the rest of you?
Hideki asked, deliberately ignoring her question.
The Japanese soldiers here are going to attack the Americans tomorrow morning, and we're the first wave,
Kimiko told him.
They're going to use the Okinawan children as human shields.
Hideki's heart cracked into pieces and fell apart. He sat down on an empty ammunition box and stared at the boys and girls at the back of the cave. They were all much younger than him, around 5 to 10 years old. They couldn't know what was coming, and couldn't do anything about it if they did. To think about these little boys and girls, after all they had already lost, being thrown to the American guns, Hideki closed his eyes and cried without tears.
What are you even doing here?
Kimiko asked him.
I came to rescue you,
Hideki told her.
Rescue me? I was about to rescue myself. And now I have to rescue my little brother, too. You don't have to rescue me, Hideki protested. I'm rescuing you.
Kimiko's expression shifted from exasperated to suspicious. She squinted and looked him up and down.
What?
Hideki said. Kimiko didn't say anything, but it was clear to Hideki that she could see there was something different about him. Could Kimiko see Rei's Mabui on him, without Hideki even telling her about it? There was something else he needed to tell her first.
Kimiko, Oto is dead. So are Anma and Isamu.
Kimiko put a hand to the wall of the cave to steady herself.
I knew that Anma and Isamu were gone. I heard their ship had been sunk. But Oto, I sensed he had gone to join our ancestors, but I didn't know for sure.
Tears spilled from her eyes.
You and I are all that's left now.
That's why I came for you, Hideki told her. I was with Oto when he died. I promised him I would find you, and I did.
Kimiko laid a hand on his shoulder, and Hideki covered his sister's hand with his own.
I never told our parents what really happened to me, how I got the white streak in my hair,
Kimiko said.
I never told anybody.
Hideki frowned. He couldn't remember a time when she didn't have the white streak.
It was years ago, when you were just a baby. I was too little to go in the ocean without Oto or Anma there, but I did it anyway. Me and Fumiko, another girl from the village. A giant wave came and tumbled me, sweeping me under and flipping me over and over, so I didn't know which way was up. I've never felt so helpless. So out of control, I couldn't breathe, couldn't scream. I hit my head on a rock and passed out, and the next thing I knew, I was flat on my back on the sand, and Fumiko was bent over me sobbing. She told me I wasn't breathing when she pulled me out of the water. I had drowned. I was dead, and now I was alive again.
Hideki was aghast. How had he never heard this story before?
I never told Oto and Anma what happened, because I didn't want to get into trouble. But when my hair grew back in the place where I'd cut myself, it grew in white. And from that day on, I had a special connection with the dead. That's why I'm a Yuta.
Her voice grew soft.
I've been dead once, Hideki, and I don't want to die again.
Then we've got to get out of here, said Hideki. Is there another way out of the cave?
Yes,
Kimiko told him.
But you're not going to like it.
The Mother of All Bombs. Kimiko was right. Hideki didn't like it. An unexploded bomb the size of a cow sat in the mud right in the mouth of the cave's back entrance. The bomb was greenish-gray, with four black fins sticking up at the back and a yellow band painted around the base of its nose cone. Why the huge bomb hadn't gone off when it hit was a mystery, and the slightest touch now might set it off. If it exploded, the whole cave would be blown to bits. It was the mother of all bombs, and there was barely room to squeeze past it. The IJA hadn't even bothered to leave a guard by this back exit, because they thought no one would be crazy enough to go near the bomb. Hideki took a step back in fear.
"That's the only way out?" he asked.
"Yes," Kimiko told him. "It's either that, or we die tomorrow with those soldiers. I overheard the generals at the command post. The plan is for the IJA to hold out as long as they can at each ridge. Just when the Americans are about to overrun them, they retreat to the next ridge and start all over again, all the way to the southern end of the island. In between retreats, they send infiltration squads to attack the Americans by night, but they're not meant to survive either. The Japanese army was never going to win, Hideki. They're just here to slow the Americans down. They're trying to take as many American soldiers with them as they can, and as many Okinawans too, I guess."
Hideki felt numb. One plane for one battleship, one man for 10 of the enemy. Wasn't that what Lieutenant Colonel Sano had told the Blood and Iron Student Corps before sending them out with their grenades to attack the Americans? That night outside his school felt like years ago to Hideki. But the price of an Okinawan life was far cheaper even than one man for 10 of the enemy. Far cheaper than the life of one Japanese soldier, that was for sure. And Hideki was tired of sacrificing people he cared about.
"Then we do it," Hideki said. "The bomb might go off, and it might not. But if we stay, the IJA will definitely kill us. And at least this way, we have a chance."
Kimiko looked sideways at Hideki, like she was measuring him again, but she didn't say anything. Hideki and Kimiko went back to the main part of the cave. They told Masako the plan, and very quietly, the three of them gathered the 8 Okinawan children and led them to the back entrance. Masako gasped when she saw the bomb.
"We have to get past that."
"You can do it. We have to,"
Hideki said. He turned to his sister.
"You and Masako go out first. I'll send the kids out to you. Get them as far away from the bomb as you can."
Kimiko nodded. She approached the bomb, took a deep breath, and slid sideways between the cave wall and the metal shell. The space was too narrow to avoid touching the bomb, and gently, oh so gently, she put her hands against it. Hideki held his breath, and Masako closed her eyes. Kimiko wiggled sideways, and the gap between the bomb and the wall got tighter. Tighter. She spread her arms around the bomb and carefully rested her weight against it as she slithered through the narrowest spot. And then she was past it and outside. Hideki let out his breath, and beside him, Masako opened her eyes and bit off a sob of relief.
"You're next," Hideki told her.
"I can't do it,"
she said.
"You can," Hideki told her.
We survived that cave of flames, didn't we? These kids need you to be just as strong as you were for those injured soldiers in the hospital. I know you can do it. Just do what Kimiko did.
Masako took a deep breath and nodded. She avoided the bomb as long as she could, pressing herself against the cave wall. But soon the space grew too narrow, too short. She froze. Her back curled against the cave wall, holding her body just centimeters from the curving side of the bomb. Kimiko called encouragement to her from where she stood outside, but Masako couldn't go any farther. She closed her eyes and shook her head, her trembling body hovering just inches above the bomb.
"Masako, you can do it,"
Hideki told her again.
"No, no. I've seen what American bombs do to bodies. I don't want to end up like that,"
Masako cried.
"You won't," Hideki said. He looked at the frightened children with him. "None of us will."
Masako just shook her head more forcefully. She wasn't going to budge, but she couldn't keep pressing herself into the curving wall at her back forever, and with a scream of panic, she lost her balance. With nothing to grab onto, she fell face first onto the bomb.
Clang!
Hideki gasped and closed his eyes, waiting for the mother of all bombs to explode. Standoff. The bomb didn't explode. Not yet. But Masako was done. Her courage was exhausted. Her legs gave out and she started to slide to the ground, sobbing. But Kimiko was there on the other side to take her hand and pull her the rest of the way past the bomb, out into the rain. Hideki sighed with relief, but he still had a job to do. He straightened and addressed the children.
"There, see? They both got past. We can do it too," Hideki told them. "It's like a game. Who can get through without touching any of the metal?"
The children were wise to him, though. If Masako's fear hadn't already infected them, they had all seen enough bombs in the last 2 months, enough death to understand the danger. They knew this wasn't a game. But if Hideki had learned anything from playing with his younger brother Isamu, it was that little kids were often brave where teenagers and adults were scared. Because little kids thought they were invincible. The number of times Isamu had jumped down from a branch that was too high, or put his hands too close to the kitchen fire, or tried to pet a strange dog. Hideki got choked up thinking about his little brother. Isamu, who had been brave enough to leave half his family and board a strange ship for a land he'd never been to before. Isamu, whom he would never see again. Hideki shook off his sorrow for his little brother, saving it for another time. If he didn't get these children past the mother of all bombs, they would all be joining Isamu too soon. One by one, Hideki helped the boys and girls slide around the bomb and into Kimiko's waiting hands outside. Hideki's stomach was full of butterflies the whole time, but not because he worried about the bomb going off and killing him, he realized. Because he didn't want any more children, any more innocent Okinawans, to die for a fight that wasn't theirs.
"Halt! Where are you going? What are you doing?"
someone yelled, and Hideki spun. A Japanese soldier was aiming a rifle right at them.
"Stop, or I'll shoot!"
the Japanese soldier cried. Hideki's heart caught in his throat. His first instinct was to panic, to run. But there was nowhere to run. And he'd been through too much by now to panic over a nervous IJA private aiming a shaky gun at him. Like Kimiko, Hideki didn't want to die, but he wasn't afraid of death anymore either. A steady calm came over Hideki. It stilled him from head to toe, like the cool breeze off the sea in summer, and all the tension left him. Hideki stepped in front of the last of the children, a little boy, right in between the soldier on one side and the boy and the bomb on the other.
"Go ahead," Hideki said.
The soldier frowned.
"What?"
"Go ahead and shoot," Hideki told him.
"But just know that if you miss, or if the bullet goes through me, you'll hit the bomb behind me, and then you'll be dead too. We all will be."
The soldier's rifle dipped as he realized Hideki was right. Hideki watched the private's eyes dart this way and that as he considered his options.
"What's your name?"
Hideki asked the remaining little boy.
"Kazuo,"
he squeaked.
"Go on, Kazuo. You'll be all right, Hideki told him.
The Japanese soldier took aim with his rifle again.
No one is allowed to leave. Come away from there at once, or I'll shoot.
The little boy looked to Hideki for direction, and Hideki nodded for him to go on past the bomb.
Stop!
The soldier said. He raised his rifle again, but Kazuo didn't stop, and the soldier didn't shoot. When Kazuo was safely through, Hideki slid the pack off his shoulders and turned to leave.
I said stop!
The soldier cried. There was panic in his voice. A panic Hideki no longer felt. Hideki handed his backpack through the narrow gap to Kimiko, then slid sideways to follow it. If the soldier tried to shoot him now, he had a better chance of hitting the bomb than Hideki.
No one is permitted to leave!
The private yelled. A riptide pulled at Hideki's stomach as the distance between the wall and the bomb got narrower and narrower. He was going to have to put his hands on the thing, wrap his arms around it the way everyone else had. Would his touching the bomb now set it off at last? Would the soldier let his orders override his common sense? Had Kimiko and Masako gotten the children far enough away where they wouldn't be hurt? Distracted by his own thoughts and fears, Hideki lost his balance the way Masako had. He'd meant to let himself against the bomb slowly, gently, but now he fell onto it with a teeth-rattling thud.
Clang!
The ceramic grenade in Hideki's pocket whacked the side of the bomb like a hammer, and he flinched and closed his eyes. Had the grenade cracked? Was it going to explode? Hideki froze for what seemed like an eternity, wondering if he was dead and just didn't know it. At last he took a deep breath and opened his eyes. Gray painted metal and lines of rivets stared back at him. Water streamed down the side of the bomb like the sweat running down Hideki's back. The bomb was still there, and so was he. Hideki glanced sideways to see what the soldier was doing, but he was gone.
Hideki, come on!
Kimiko called to him. He turned to look the other way, and there she was, right by the bomb. She hadn't run off and left him. Hideki closed his eyes and slithered the rest of the way around the bomb, the grenade in his pocket digging into him as it scraped along. And then it wasn't scraping anymore. And there was more room between the cave wall and Hideki, and Kimiko was taking his hand and pulling him free. Hideki fell into his sister's waiting arms, and she held him while he shook. All the tension of the moment washed back over him. He and Kimiko hadn't hugged like this in a long time. They were both too old for that kind of thing, but now neither of them cared. They were still alive, and they were together, and they held on to each other like they would never let go again.
What is that?
Kimiko said at last, feeling the hard lump in Hideki's shirt pocket.
A grenade?
Hideki said. He pulled it out and showed it to her.
That's not a grenade, you idiot, Kimiko said. It's a piece of pottery. It is too a grenade, Hideki said, and it works, I know.
That was all he said. Kimiko seemed to understand there was more to the story, but she let it go, for now.
You have a grenade?
Masako called. She was watching them from beyond the next hill, where she waited with the children.
Use it on the bomb!
What? Hideki said.
Why? To close the cave off, to blow them all up,
Masako called. She knelt and put her arms around a little boy, the one who had still been in the cave when the Japanese soldier threatened to shoot them.
It's only fair after what they were going to do to us.
Hideki thought about it as he and Kimiko joined the others. At last he shook his head and put the grenade back in his pocket.
You told me to be brave enough to slide past that beast, but you're not brave enough to throw your grenade at it?
Masako challenged him. Hideki frowned. Was he just being a coward again? Maybe. But there was more to it than that. He couldn't explain it to Masako. He wasn't even sure he could explain it to himself. Shouts came from inside the cave. The soldier had gone back for help. Hideki didn't know if any of them would be able to squeeze past the bomb or would set it off trying. But he didn't want to be around to find out.
Come on, he told the others. Time to go. Where?
Kimiko asked him.
South?
No, Hideki told her.
North. Back through the front lines. We're going home.
Lies and Dreams. Hideki led Kimiko, Masako, and the children on a zigzag path up muddy hills and down blasted valleys, but always north, toward the illumination shells and the gunshots and explosions. Toward home. Hideki, Kimiko, and Masako pulled the last of the children up to the top of a steep ridge. They stopped to take a breather, but something about this particular place made Hideki's skin prickle. He motioned for the others to be quiet and stay where they were, and he crept down the other side of the ridge, holding on to tree stumps so as not to slide. And there it was, a Japanese army machine gun nest. It was pointed north toward the direction the advancing Americans would come from. Hideki was standing on the hill above the nest where the Japanese soldiers inside couldn't see him, but they would see Hideki and others when they passed by, and the soldiers would likely shoot them as spies or for running away. Hideki snuck back to report his findings to Kimiko and Masako.
"Why can't we just go around them?"
Kimiko asked.
"Head west for a while, then turn back north."
Hideki shook his head.
"If there's a nest here, then there are nests up and down this ridgeline, to the west and east. This is the new defensive line. If we don't find a way past this machine gun, we'll just have to find a way past the next one."
"What do we do?"
Masako asked.
"I'll take care of it," Hideki said. "Give me 5 minutes, then take the kids over the ridge and down through the next valley. I'll keep the machine gunners distracted."
"How?"
Kimiko asked. Hideki shrugged and headed back down the ridge.
"I'll think of something."
"Use your grenade,"
Masako hissed. Hideki considered it again. His last grenade. The one the IJA had given him to kill himself with. The fragile ceramic thing had survived the whole awful battle. All he had to do was chuck the thing through the hole cut in the hillside, and the machine gun nest would be destroyed. So would the soldiers who operated it. Then Kimiko and Masako and the children could slip safely by. Hideki thought he saw something moving out of the corner of his eye, and he glanced sideways at it, but no one was there. Hideki put a hand to the stitches under his hair and wondered if he was sensing the ghost of Ray, or if his head wound was playing tricks on him. Either way, it was a stark reminder of what happened when you threw grenades at people. He would just have to find a different way to distract the soldiers. Hideki returned to the hill above the machine gun nest and took a deep breath. He had to make this work for Kimiko and Masako and the little kids.
"Yokai!"
Hideki said, loud enough for the soldiers inside to hear him.
"What?"
someone called from the bunker.
"Who said that? Who's there?"
"Yokai!"
Hideki said again.
"You don't sound like a ghost,"
the soldier called back. He still couldn't see who was talking, and Hideki could hear the rising panic in the soldier's voice.
"Yokai is the new password," Hideki said. "I'm from headquarters. You're supposed to give me the response."
"Response? We don't know the response," the soldier called back. "Nobody tells us anything out here."
all right," Hideki said. "I can tell you're Japanese. I'm coming down."
Hideki scrambled down the muddy slope and climbed inside the tiny machine gun nest. There were only two soldiers there, both Japanese army privates. Their clothes were muddy and oversized, like the men had shrunk in the rain, and they each had scraggly beards that showed just how long they'd been alone. The bunker reeked of sweat and urine, and there were 3 inches of water on the floor. Between them stood a Type 92 heavy machine gun. How long had Hideki been gone? Was it already 5 minutes? He had to hurry. Kimiko and Masako and the kids might already be moving by now.
"Private Hideki Kaneshiro, Blood and Iron Student Corps,"
Hideki said, saluting them.
"Lieutenant Colonel Sano sent me."
It wasn't exactly a lie. Through the window of the bunker, Hideki caught a flash of movement. It wasn't Ray's ghost this time. It was Kimiko, Masako, and the kids. They were out in the open, where the machine gunners could see them